Welcome to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, safely ensconced in the bunker, and no weird noises in the ward today, except for the emergency alert going off on every single device, making me jump out of my pants. So.
Yeah, we didn't mention it last week, but you're famous for being the like the Leonard Nimoy of the ward. You're going to see this weird phenomenon.
In search of a high-pitched sound, which I have not found, but seems to have disappeared on my exercise blocks. So mission accomplished, I believe, but mystery still not solved, though.
Interesting. It was there and it vanished. Oddly enough, right after it was a big newspaper article... in the local press.
It's freaky, Scott, man. It's
Scotty Hertz was on to them, whatever, whoever they were, and they quickly retreated. Anyway, Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can find us here every Thursday at 5 p.m. as we talk about the latest news items from Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and around the world, and sometimes interview local newsmakers and politicians, which this week will be something from the Politico Archive, an interview I did in December 2019 with former mayor Norm Jerry, who sadly passed away last week at the age of 91. The man called the voice of Guelph, newsman for so many years, trained, or I'm not sure if he trained with Lloyd Robertson or he trained Lloyd Robertson, but they were contemporaries. Mm-hmm. So he leaves a pretty big legacy, even outside of being the mayor of Guelph, in a pretty decisive time in the 70s and 80s.
For sure.
So that will be at the bottom of the hour. Before that, we will talk about Ontario's new confusing double dare stay-at-home measures and the criticism that the Ford government might not know what they're doing after all this time. But first, it's been a week in les États-Unis. Finishing up yesterday, well, maybe not finishing up, but I mean, as of yesterday, with the second record-setting second impeachment of Donald Trump in the House, which converted 10 Republicans to join their Democratic colleagues. It is the most bipartisan impeachment there has ever been, getting 10 people from the opposition benches, as it were. And, oh, I don't even know where to begin with this, Scotty.
It's epic. Of course. So the vote was 232 to 197, as you said, and there has been very little, I think, bipartisan support for anything in the House these days and over the past few years. But this one is interesting how many have defected. It's also interesting how many are springing to Trump's defense and will not... back down from that. I'm thinking specifically of Ted Cruz, but there are others who are demands are being made for them as well to be grouped in with the other insurrectionists. I think we've settled on insurrection as the term for what happened at the Capitol. That seems to be the most common in the media because it wasn't quite the revolution that Elizabeth from Knoxville wanted. It was more of an invasion, which of course is hovering over everything right now. Trump still seems to be trying to behave as if it's business as usual. I think today he was giving some sort of music award, like as service to America, to Toby Keith, which is probably on point for Trump to just sort of continue on as if nothing happened, but also denying that he was in any way, my people are not violent. I can't remember his exact words. I heard it earlier this morning as to the excuses he was making for the insurrectionists. Weird to say the least. The impeachment proceedings will go to the Senate, and the Senate doesn't convene until January 19th. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next week. I did predict, we're famous for our predictions, but that, he would end not only on a strange note, but he would be done before his term was played out. Whether that will be on the last day, it's unlikely. But I didn't know this. The impeachment proceedings can actually continue beyond the term due to the fact that, as we know, somebody who has been the president, you're still technically a president. You're like an ex officio president, and you have a security detail, and you're given some money, and people will refer to you as Mr. President when speaking to you until you are gone. So that's the point of this, is to keep Trump out in 2024. And the off chance that he might live that long, I can't see it personally, but you never know. The guy just keeps bouncing back from stuff, including COVID. So will he ever go away? I don't know.
I'm starting to think that Ronny Jackson is right, that, you know, slight tweaks to his diet, he might live to be 200, because he's managed to make it this far living off Filet-O-Fish and Whoppers. It's it's kind of remarkable. The thing with impeachment, even though it's, you know, it's likely going to happen after he's left office, and I think there's been some discussion that he's going to leave for Mar-a-Lago on January 19th, so that he can use Air Force One. Apparently, because the way this goes is, and we saw this with the transition from Obama to Trump, that, you know, the president gets sworn in, the new president gets sworn in, the old president is there, they go back to the White House, the old president gets on Marine One, flies to Andrews, gets on Air Force One, and Air Force One takes them home, so to speak. Apparently, though, the new president has to give his permission. So Trump would have to ask Joe Biden if it would be okay for him to take Air Force One to Florida, and
no, that's not happening, right?
and this is why he would be leaving on the 19th, so he wouldn't have to, I guess, in Trump's mind, disgrace himself by asking the new president to use Air Force One. So that seems to be the plan. But yeah, the real mechanism behind this is that Trump gets a pension. If he's impeached, he won't get a pension. He gets Secret Service protection. If he's impeached, he won't get Secret Service protection. And then there would be part of that vote, too, would be that he could not run again for any federal public office. Anyway, I think it's federal, but so he could theoretically run for governor of Florida, which he would probably win pretty easily because Florida. But he couldn't run. Basically, he couldn't run for president. And I think that would be, if there's sort of like a caveat that would swing certain Republicans, like the current leader of the Senate GOP, Mitch McConnell, it would be that Trump could not run again, because I think that for a lot of members of the let's say more level-headed members of the Republican Party, that would be the most attractive part, is to never have to live under the Sturm und Drang of Trump's whims ever again, and they can just focus on conservative judges and tax cuts for the rich in peace without all the other stuff that goes along with Trump.
The circus.
Yeah.
And it's both McConnell and, I guess, to some degree, Pence have let Trump down. And I think one of Trump's last tweets was the pretty much get Pence tweet, which led to the insurrectionist chanting, was it Hang Mike Pence?
Hang Mike Pence.
Hang Mike Pence. So Pence, it's a case of, if he was able to implement the 25th Amendment, which is the vice president taking down the president, he would probably have nothing to lose in that, because he's already in the bad books for...
He has nothing
in the bad books for reading out the Electoral College vote, which he had no control over. He's pretty much just the person that had to present that.
And I was reading a Washington Post story that basically said he has no future in Republican politics, because he's burned the bridge with Trump, and too many other Republicans who may be Trump suspicious, you know, they see him as too close. He's, you know, up until the Electoral College vote last week, he was glued to the hip with Donald Trump. So, you know, both sides of the Republican Party don't want him anymore. So what future is he trying to hold on to? What is he trying to preserve?
Definitely yesterday's man. And I can't remember. Yeah. I can't remember who said it, but the whole impeachment process, it's been said, will make the purge easier, and not the purge of Republicans that sided with Trump, but of Trumpism. I think there's hope in a lot of Republican circles that they can sort of exercise the the spirit of Trumpism and the ghost of Trump, which will loom large over them for a while, because the loyalists are still there. I mentioned Ted Cruz, and there's other bureaucrats as well, elected and otherwise, who are still, you know, super loyal to the guy. So until that gets either a bit tempered, or they in turn get purged or beaten back to some degree, we're still going to see the legacy of Trump within that party, and whether it may not serve them well in future years.
Well, I mean, that's the other part of this too, is that, I mean, Trump, you know, is a gravitational force, so he kind of, you know, sucks all attention towards him. But the next part of this too is who else is I guess an insurrectionist in waiting, because you have Democratic Congressman Mikey Sherrill, who is asking for an investigation into members of her not her party, but of her body of government, of Congress, who may have been showing around insurrectionists inside the Capitol the day before. You have Jim Clyburn saying his office was kind of ransacked, and it's kind of bizarre because he's one of the more high-profile members of Congress, but because the Capitol is a maze of offices and not well signed, he's curious as to how people were able to find his office and trash it. And you have three members in particular, Andy Briggs, Paul Gosar, and Mo Brooks, who seem to have been coordinating with this character, Ali Alexander, who was kind of the head of the parade in terms of planning to stop the Steel rally, trading tweets with him. Now they are, Brooks, Briggs, and Gosar are all denying that they know this person. They never heard of him until the Washington Post called them and asked them about him, even though he's tagged in their tweets. But there are some serious questions about, I can't believe we're saying this, was the insurrection an inside job? I'm having flashbacks to good old 9/11 conspiracy theories now.
Yeah, but there's a heavy grain of truth to the fact that it might have been, and there was that massive Parler information dump, I guess, before it was taken down too, where they're able to trace where people were, who was communicating with whom, and the geeks are all over it, let's say, trying to tease out information as to who may have been in contact with whom. Because, yeah, it's not exactly the kind of place, I believe there are tours of it, but it's not as if you would, you know, intimately know where things are. And they do that for good reason. And if you've seen the news over the past couple of days, the security that they probably should have had last week is there in full force now, with National Guards people sleeping on the floor as if they're on maneuvers, a fence around the place. Like, the security's been amped up 1,000 times greater, because they are, I think, deeply concerned that there's going to be more of this. It sounds like the state capitals are doing the same, because there has been traffic among certain groups online saying that, yeah, we're going to take the capital, pick your state. Georgia was mentioned, among others. Mm-hmm. And as we know, which I think was a bit of a dress rehearsal for what happened in the capital, was, and I'd sort of forgotten about it, the invasion of the Michigan Capitol back when they and I can't remember the exact date when they were after it. Was it in April? It was, yeah, it's almost a year ago, where they were after Gretchen Whitmer.
It was pretty early into all this. Yeah,
and Michigan was a place which is open carry, and as you saw in those, you know, that footage is almost is not identical, because there was lots of people carrying weapons, and how that didn't get much worse than it was, I don't know. But as I think I had said this last week, had we, you know, if DC was an open carry or even a concealed carry place, I think last week's events may have been much different. But it sounds like places like Michigan and Georgia are passing rules to make Capitol buildings areas where you cannot carry weapons. Who's to say that would necessarily stop people? But they all have to be on their game, whether it's the smallest state, like Vermont, say, or the larger ones. They need to be on it, or, you know, you will see situations like we saw in the Capitol last week.
Yeah, and, you know, on the TV now, there's images from Capitol Hill, the mall, looks like it's a demilitarized zone. There's tall fencing everywhere. There's big soldiers with big guns and camo everywhere. It's not what you want to see if you're living in a supposedly free country. You have Airbnb, certain hotels in DC canceling reservations or no longer taking reservations. Airbnb actually put out a statement that said that they had tied certain people booking Airbnb accommodations to hate groups. I'm not entirely sure how they did that, but they started canceling reservations during inaugural week. So, I mean, this really has sort of shaken up the regular order of things, and goodness only knows what is going to happen. I mean, my hope is that everything goes smoothly. I mean, they just announced Lady Gaga is going to perform. So, I mean, God save Lady Gaga, but
she'll jump out of a chopper like she did at the Super Bowl, right? She might have to.
She might have to at this rate. Like a halo jump. Like
parachute me. Down. Yeah. It's like, just give her a job in the government because, you know, they need her.
Yeah, it's just, it's a blank show, and you're right about the Purge. Again, we're not talking about like the Purge, like the movie Purge, but just, you know, there has to be some accounting for the Jim Jordans, for the Paul Gozers, for the Marjorie Taylor Greens, who unironically stands up in Congress on live TV and wears a mask that says censored on it. Yeah, there just has to be a shakeup.
Clever. Well, the shakeup is hitting Trump where it counts and in a place that he can understand. Yes. In terms of canceled contracts. I'm thinking in particular of, and I didn't know this, the Trump Organization runs the amusements in Central Park. The beautiful carousel there actually is under Trump. It sounds like you got it fixed up, and in the Bronx as well. So all these, it's a multi-million dollar contract. Bill de Blasio is like, nope, sorry, you're cut. Same with the PGA in 2022. Yep. The professional golf tournament was supposed to be at Trump's New Jersey golf course, and that's been canceled as well. And that is the kind of thing that Trump understands. Beyond everything else, beyond everything that he says, if you start to hit him financially, that's when he's going to get the message. Everything beyond that, it is impossible to get a message through to Donald Trump. It literally, we've seen this in four or five, however many years, all of the years, that the only thing he understands really is money and where it goes and how it comes in and how can he avoid taxes and who owes him and who he owes. That's all he gets.
So, and he's been cut off from social media, and his campaign can't process credit card donations anymore because that company has canceled their contract. And, I mean, things like the Secret Service protection, I mean, he wouldn't have to pay for security because he's got Secret Service. So if that goes, if he's impeached, that's another thing. I mean,
hire Blackwater or whatever they're called now.
Yeah, his world is kind of being torn away from him. And so all these like grand plans about monetizing his post-presidency are look hard. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him because he's managed to survive this long, you know, multiple bankruptcies, being investigated for like gaming issues in AC, grab them by the, you know what? I mean, every controversy Donald Trump encounters, he vaults it like he's Super Mario, but hopefully there is some sign that he's going to be held to account now. We'll see. Speaking about being held to account, Ontario is now under super duper advanced lockdown measures that went into effect this morning. You may have gotten the alert like Scotty and I did.
Thankfully, it wasn't at 4 a.m., which I would have been not happy if it was at 4 in the morning. It's like, okay, I know I'm at home.
Yeah.
Waking me up at home to tell me to stay home.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
But I mean, the frustration here is kind of emblematic of a situation where the government didn't release the FAQ about what constitutes an essential trip or when you can leave your house. That wasn't released till about 7-8 o'clock last night. So, you know, we're almost 11 months, almost a year into this, and we're still kind of making this up as we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this, it's been difficult to tease out what's supposed to happen because there are they put a lot of stress on things that are essential, but there are, you know, non-essential things that are open that you would need to effectively violate the rules to go and get, right? So on the one hand, Ford was saying at that presser yesterday about if you have to think about it, then you should probably just stay home because it isn't essential. But yet if a business is open, like even let's just say a coffee place, you can go pick it up. Is coffee essential to your life? So there's fine tuning there as to what constitutes essential or non-essential. But also it was somebody, I think, from the Metro Toronto police who was saying that we're not really sure what to enforce yet because, you know, how do you determine if somebody is violating it? You could potentially be out for your exercise. You could be trying to do a workaround like those people did in Quebec with the husband on the leash, which was funny, but they both got nailed $1,500. I don't know if that's going to necessarily happen in Ontario, but you people pretty much, by the sounds of it, should have their reasons or excuses ready as to why they are out. Mm-hmm. And I was confused, and I'm still confused about workplaces because they seem to be stressing essential work. But, you know, are you necessarily considered essential if you're not, say, in healthcare or food distribution? Like, there is that long and hard list about essential and non-essential workers. But if you work night shift, say, and you're not supposed to be out, you know, do you get stopped? Like it is very confusing. The government is pretty adamant that it isn't confusing. They're saying, look, just stay home.
Right. But
it's not that simple. It is absolutely not that simple at all. So,
well, the thing of it is, Doug Ford was asked, like, do you want, like, are you going to put in a curfew? And he's like, yeah, I don't want to put that pressure on the police to, like, if you see somebody leaving their driveway at 8:01, you know, the police have to pull up and demand to know where you're going. Like, he doesn't. But at the same time, and Robin Urbach pointed this out, that he's kind of made that a 24/7 thing now. So if you're leaving your driveway at 1 p.m. and the police see you, like, do they stop and say, hey, where are you going? This better be an essential trip. And then how do you make that judgment? And on top of that, Yasmina Gray, who's a columnist at The Star, wrote that this is not great optics for black and brown people because ambiguity is where police sort of start falling into, let's say, certain traps. Mm-hmm. That, you know, she's foreseeing, like, black and brown people basically being harassed in the name of, like, well, I'm just doing this because of health and safety. And it's like, well, are you, or are you racial profiling and you're using that as an excuse? She makes the point that basically ambiguity is where, like, kind of systemic racism grows. When you sort of give police these sort of loosey-goosey authoritarian outlines. And she makes a very good point. And we saw this a lot in the initial phase when, you know, police were given power to hand out tickets. And, like, who were they handing out tickets to? Was it the three guys playing ball in the park? Or was it the one black kid who was, you know, shooting hoops by himself? Well, chances are, all things being equal, it was the one black kid and not the three white guys who was getting the ticket.
Yeah, and that it is problematic, and the fact that the rules won't be universally applied because we've got regional police and then the OPP, and bylaw as well will probably be in on the enforcement, and it is dependent on what region you're in, what zone you're in. There will be some fine tuning, I guess, of who and where might get busted, let's say, with a fine, because the fines are fairly sizable. But yeah, it's one of those things, like, if you are going to your, like, going back to this staying at home from your job and is your job essential part of it, if you're going to work at a certain time of the morning. I think this happened to a woman in Montreal, who was, I keep referring to Quebec, but they've had more stringent rules than Ontario recently, where the police stopped her and they went through her lunch bag. She was going to work. And she happened to be a lawyer, her new legal people said, why are they going through my lunch bag? Because, you know, I told them where I was going and that should be enough. So is that an illegitimate search? You're only one notch away from going from searching the lunch bag to searching the entire car and all of that. So you're right. It's how do you put a cap on it? And will these statistics be registered in any way, right? Or is it just like, well, it's emergency powers, which are broad, can lead to infractions, let's say, right? Where it's like, oh, well, I don't like the look of those guys, so I'm going to, you know, pull them over and see. But there are obviously tighter restrictions required because it was, what is his name again? Dr. Brown talking about potential statistics that Ford said were going to knock us off of our chairs. And some of those numbers are pretty extreme, especially I think if the English variant starts going through the community and it sounds like it's already here, you need to pound or keep those numbers down. But if you are, say, working the night shift at food processing plant number one and going in because you think it's just a cold, and then we see from the numbers in this area at various places, not to name any names at all, where the numbers are going up in the community. If I understand it right, you know, number one is care settings, which we know. The numbers are high and they're getting vaccinated, hopefully first, which will help. But number two is workplaces. So this is part of it as well, whether it's schools may be a bit of an exception, because if you're following things, schools are either the absolute safest place to be or the absolute worst place to be in terms of spread of COVID, right? So they're saying it's spreading among the young. Does that spread to teachers and educators and people working in schools? Well, yes, it does, right? Or the case in town where it sounds like at one of these food processing places, somebody who was a fatality but didn't necessarily work there has been linked to that place, right?
Yeah.
So is there any provision for those numbers rather than just locking everybody down saying, stay home? It's like, well, they can't stay home. You've considered them essential. They have to get to their workplace. Sometimes that's a care setting. How do we accommodate those people? Do we have paid sick leave for them, which has come up several times, but usually from the medical side of the equation, not from the government side of the equation. Some legislators and our MPP as well is like, you know, there should be paid sick time. And we used to have paid sick time. It wasn't 2 weeks, but there was a couple of days which were removed. No one's at the top seems to want to talk about that, but you want people to stay home. That is the kind of thing that needs to happen, or they will drag themselves in to work, which isn't necessarily their fault because there's no benefits and they have to stay alive, right? And that's the line that needs to be drawn with a thicker marker. Like, okay, don't cross this line.
Right? Yeah. Well, we have to cross the line of taking our break. We'll be right back after a minute. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. The sun still shone bright, and at midnight, the girl. Grass in her hair, plays the silver river on a little finger, and took the rapids to her bed. Whoa.
And that was Silver River by Shingoose, a settler named Curtis Johnny. Shingoose died of COVID-19 in a care home in Winnipeg. He was 74 years old, considered a legend among Indigenous music in Canada, and if you listen to this national broadcaster at all, you've probably heard Shin Goose and this show, actually, because we have had access to the amazing Native North America and Volume 1 collection at CFRU when we are allowed in there. So Shin Goose has left us.
And fortunately, it is available on that collection. You can get it on Spotify. You can get it other online music retailers and streaming sites. So check it out. So speaking of losses, that's a terrible segue, more than ways than one, but Norm Jerry, who was the mayor of Guelph from 1970 to 1985, he is the longest running mayor in Guelph history, and he was on council for years, like 34, 35 years, after he finished being mayor. Well, I think he technically stepped down as mayor in 1985. He continued to serve on council till the 90s. So he is a
It's a Guelph record, isn't it? Like, he's the longest serving.
He's a Guelph institution, man. And you know what boggles my mind is that he did all this while also being the news director of CJOY.
It's incredible.
He was covering the news, and he was the news at the same time, and it seemed like nobody cared. It's remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
If either of us ran for mayor, we would have to like delete 7 years worth of open source.
Just nuke it and start over.
Yeah. Right. It's just like you can't, our presence on CF or you would have to be erased because we don't want to be accused of having liberal media biases anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I got a chance to interview Norm Jerry at his home, his retirement home at the village of Riverside Glen, almost a year ago, a little over a year ago. And so we wanted to play a portion of that interview in his honor, as we say goodbye to Mayor Norm Jerry. So Norm Jerry, thank you for taking time to talk to me today.
I'm glad to do it. Always glad to cooperate.
You're still talk like the mayor. You came to be the mayor through an interesting circumstance.
Well, Ralph Smith was mayor when I served on the city council for the first couple of years. And he resigned as mayor to take another position. And luckily, I had led the polls on the previous election, so the council elected me mayor to take the place of Ralph and finish out his term.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's when I got my baptism of fire, because that was in June of that year. And within 3 weeks, I had to welcome to the city of Guelph Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that's one event that I will never, ever forget. When he came to the city of Guelph, thousands of people, it seemed like, were there to greet him.
He's Trudomania.
Trudomania, just like a rock star. And we welcomed him when he got off the train, and we were surrounded by people to protect us. And I thought my wife and I were going to be crushed. So many people wanted to touch Trudeau.
Mm-hmm.
We finally did work our way across, and he came into the city hall, signed the guest book. And we always, when we had a guest like that come to the city of Guelph, governors general and so on, we would arrange to have them speak through a microphone on a loudspeaker outside the city hall so that the people could be involved.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I always tried to do, was involve the citizens of Guelph in what was taking place. But I'll never forget that event. Oh, as I say, I thought Gene and I were going to be crushed. There were so many people. I've never seen any political figure command the crowd that he could command, no matter where he went. Trudomania was, that's really what it was, Trudomania.
Mm-hmm. You talk a lot about, you've been in the presence of a lot of, you know, great people, prime ministers, governors general, but you always say there's no greater presence to be in than people of Guelph.
Yes, I believe that's the case. I've always said that the most valuable people in the city of Guelph are the people of the city of Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Norm Jerry. It's it's the people that make the city what it is. And I've been able to meet a lot of people over the years. 4 or 5 governors general. I've even met Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried
Chicken. Oh,
really? Chicken.
Yeah.
And he was a tremendous person to interview. I was working at CJOY at the time, and I interviewed him. And, of course, he came in with his Kentucky Fried outfit on.
He was in character.
All white, white hat, white hair, white jacket, white pants, white shoes and socks and so on. And people have often asked me, was Colonel Sanders a real Kentucky colonel? And according to my research, the answer is no. I hope I'm right in saying this.
Ooh.
But my understanding is that the governor of Kentucky, and maybe a couple of other people, I don't know, had the right of giving an honor to citizens who were ambassadors in different areas for the state.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he would be an ambassador in the area of food with his chicken.
Sure, sure.
And the title they would give you was that of colonel.
Ah.
So he was Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken. But just a marvelous person to talk to. As it turned out, we ended up with our picture taken with my presenting a plate to Colonel Sanders, and we appeared in front of, I think it was called Chicken Magazine.
Oh, really? That's one of your underreported accolades. Going back to your term as mayor, though, your several terms as mayor, as it turned out, you remained the longest-serving mayor in Guelph.
So far.
Good correction. This was, you know, the 1970s, and I saw this in an article that was written about you from the Historical Society, that the Guelph Mercury looked back at your first 10 years, 70 to 80, and it was a period of this, like, just tremendous change in the city. That was the period where the Hanlon was built. That was the period where Stone Road Mall was built, and they started construction.
Cut the ribbon for Stone Road
You did
Mall.
Help cut the ribbon, yeah.
And the Willow West Mall as
And the
well.
Willow West Mall. I mean, these were boom times. And it has me thinking, like, when I go to city council every week, it's hard for me to imagine a lot of that kind of stuff getting done in a 10-year stretch. And maybe you have some thoughts on this, but does it seem to you like maybe we could get big things done faster in the past?
Well, I'm not involved with the city council at the present time.
No.
So I have no way.
You're
really
conspicuous by your absence.
Of comparing the two. But we had some good councillors back then, and I think the councillors all felt that their job was to do their best on behalf of the city of Guelph. And I think we did get a lot of things done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the difficulties then was we started out with 1-year terms, then 2-year terms, and then 3-year terms.
Right.
Now it's going to be easier to break the Norm Jerry so-called record because it's a 4-year term.
Right.
I had to win 7, 8, 9, 10 different elections to establish that. But forever honored by the citizens of Guelph for their support, and deeply grateful and very, very humble.
And it was a part-time gig still. It was a part-time job being mayor.
Well, some people used to say that, but no, then nobody can be mayor and do it part-time.
Right.
You might have something else on the side, like I still worked at CJOY,
mm-hmm.
but I still worked 40, 50, 60, 70 hours or you do whatever it takes to do to serve in the office of mayor. So. Mm-hmm. I never ever gotten too much to that idea of the part-time mayor, no.
Yeah, nobody, in name only.
Nobody serves on the council as a councillor now or as a mayor and can sort of be part-time. You might have, as I say, some other things you're also doing.
Mm-hmm.
But no, there's no such thing as part-time, in my opinion, anyway.
Right. I think a lot of the current councillors would probably agree with you. They're technically part-time.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned, you know, still going into the radio as mayor. You're still reading the news every day. And, you know, it made me think, you know, things are very different in the political and the media environments now. Do you think you could get away with that today, being the mayor and being the guy delivering the news? Do you think people would be okay with that?
You mean being working at the radio station?
Yeah.
I don't know. I had difficulty sometimes with it back then.
Yeah.
There were reporters who questioned my being the news director and also serving on city council.
And directing the news.
And, well, directing the news, except when it came to the city of Guelph.
Right.
That was totally separate. Total different members of the CJOY staff covered the city council meetings. And I know I had to answer that question probably a dozen or two dozen times with different reporters who would question me about it. And they went to the CRTC, the Canadian Radio and Television Commission.
Oh, wow.
And they said, no, there's no problem with being news director and mayor, provided you have this separate way it's covered.
Sure.
And we did. So, you know, I had to live through that, and I did it. And maybe because I've always tried to be fair and honest and approachable, that maybe that's why the citizens of Guelph didn't worry about it.
Yeah. It says to me, and, you know, you're very open about you had to basically keep it in two different orbits, that, you know, you couldn't be mayor and cover yourself and couldn't direct that coverage. But it says to me that, you know, back then, as today, there's still kind of an, you know, people don't really understand the two jobs, and that maybe we haven't done a great job of informing the public about how the our spheres work.
That I don't know whether that would be possible today to do the same thing. That I can't answer because I'm not involved with the council today.
Yeah.
But and the people would have to answer. Yeah. I always said, let's leave it up to the citizens of Guelph.
Yeah.
If they think it's wrong, they'll vote for somebody else. If they think it's right, hopefully they'll vote for me. And I guess thankfully they did.
Yeah. It almost speaks to, though, again, you know, a different feeling in 2019 than maybe opposed to 1970 or 1979. Things feel a bit nastier today.
They are. As one of the things that concerns me is the political divisions that are taking place nowadays, not so much in the municipal area, but in the others, it seems to be a personal attack.
Yeah.
Then you don't know what their issues are. What are they going to do for us? Or not do for us, as the case may be.
Yeah.
And I personally don't like this idea of personal attack.
Yeah.
It's not good for politics, but it's the same way, and maybe it's because we have the social media and so on, that nowadays anybody can almost say anything they like about anybody and get away with it because you don't exactly know who they are anyway.
Reading up on you, you said that your greatest political strength was impatience, but it was also your greatest political weakness, too.
I think so. I like to get things done, and maybe going back to a question you asked earlier, maybe that's why we got things done.
Yeah.
There were a number of people on city council who wanted to get things done. And I was never one to sit at council and talk about the thing for several hours. We had a committee set up, and I often can recall saying, look, we have a committee. Why are we going to talk about this for 2 or 3 hours tonight? And then refer it to the committee. Let's refer it to the committee now. Let them do all the research, get all the information, report it back to council, and then as a council we can discuss it and make an informed decision.
Yeah.
But don't take away, if you have a committee session, don't take away by talking all about it first and then referring it back to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we got things done, I think.
I get that, and I think there's also people who do enjoy the process, who enjoy the rigorous process of, you know, examining things from every angle, make sure we're on the right track, make sure the engagement is right. From your experience, like, where's the sweet spot? You know, how do you balance your impatience and the needs of others who maybe want to, you know, look at things from all the angles first.
Well, I was impatient, all right, because I wanted to get things done.
Right.
But I'm also very patient in terms of what the final decision might be.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wonder what was best for the citizens of the city of Guelph. I think that's what every politician elected should remember, that you're not there to serve yourself.
Right.
You're there to serve other people. And I always tried to involve the people of the city of Guelph in the decision. I went to all sorts of events and so on, not just because I thought that's what I should do, but because I could find out when I was there
right.
what people were talking about, what they wanted, what they liked about this project or didn't like about that project. And I found I got a lot of very valuable information by doing that, by going around and being here, there, and everywhere as I possibly could.
Yeah. It strikes me, too, that that's sometimes where you get the best information, or at least the angles of that, you know, you don't cover in council. I think just from, again, my own experience sitting in council, there are the frequent flyers that a lot of the people who delegate to council are people who are comfortable with that format, or they're often have a number of issues they're concerned about. It's once in a while you sort of get someone who is new and is perhaps stirred about a subject that gets up to council.
That's a very good point, because quite often the people who come as delegations to the city council, which I greatly encouraged when I was mayor, they have a particular position to take. Whereas if you go around the different city, you're talking to people who may or may not have a particular position to take, but you can find out what they feel and what they think, so that you not only get those who are very firmly entrenched
mm-hmm.
in how they feel about something, but you get the other opinion too. And I think all of this kind of opinion is necessary so that you make what I guess is traditionally known as an informed decision.
Right. I also wonder if maybe your experience as a newsman helped inform that too, because I find as a reporter, you kind of stand apart from the process, that, you know, you're not looking at council, you're not looking at the delegates or the public reaction, but it gives you sort of an insight where you can maybe reconcile both sides of something. Was that an asset to you, do you think?
I would think so. Because when I was in charge of the news and sports department at CJOY and CKLA-FM at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And your job is to inform the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you suddenly become mayor or a member of city council, that's still your job to inform the people of why you're
right.
making a decision you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think myself and the counselors of the day always tried to do, is let the public know what's going on and why you're doing it, and have different meetings with the public, different sessions of the public, again, to come back so that you make an informed and proper decision.
Mm-hmm.
Not always the right one, maybe, but you do the best you can.
Right. Generally online, when you know, people talking about Guelph of the past and their fondness, it seems to be your era. And I'm not saying it's necessarily driven by a love of you, although the love is there, because I saw some of the comments on the Guelph Today piece you recently did with Troy. That's, you know, there's a lot of people who miss you and wish you were still at City Hall. But I do find that there's a certain sense of, that they missed that time period. That was a sort of a unique time period that people have fond feelings for, that era, the 70s, the early 80s.
That might very well be true. I can't relate too much to it because I'm not involved in the council and
right.
haven't been for a number of years, so I can't compare then to the city now so much.
Yeah.
But I know that one of the things we always tried to stress was to involve the citizens of the city of Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what people are elected to do, not to... I always use the phrase, I will always remember that I have been appointed, not anointed.
Ah.
And that makes it makes quite a difference. Right. When you're appointed, you know then that you're responsible to the people who put you there. When you're anointed, you may assume you can do what the heck you like and it's okay. So I remember writing that down, actually.
Yeah.
That, Norm, always remember you're appointed, not anointed.
How do you think politics changed? How do you think you changed politics during your time as mayor? How was council when you arrived there, and how do you think you left it?
I think we always had a pretty good council. Whether I contributed to it, that's up to the citizens of Guelph.
Right.
It always has been and always will be. I did my best. That's kind of difficult for me to answer because, again, it's sort of a personal question. I do the best I can. The council does the best it can. It might have been a little different then than it is now. I don't know so much municipally. I don't think there's too much of this personal animosity and personal attack on one another, but you look at the provincial and the federal and you look at the U.S. and so on, and they always seem to be trying to cut the other person down, and you never know when the discussion's over. What are you going to do? What are your policies?
Well, Mayor Jerry, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a real pleasure getting to talk to you.
I'm always glad. I can always recall one former mayor not talking to press or getting back to them right away. And I remember somebody writing in the paper, so-and-so, I won't mention the person, so-and-so should contact former mayor former mayor Norm Jerry about dealing with the press. Because I always got back as quickly as I could. Because I never understood, if you treat the press fairly, I always found that they would treat you fairly.
Did that mayor ever call you for advice?
Yeah, and but if you start ignoring them, then they may start ignoring you. But I always, as soon as I got a call, and I wasn't available, I always got back to them as quickly as I could.
Well, you got back to me very quickly, and I did appreciate that.
Okay, I'm glad I did, and I'm glad we've done the interview, and I wish you every future success.
I wish the same for you. So thank you again, Mayor Jerry.
Good show.
Obviously, that was Mayor Norm Jerry and me a little over a year ago, and I didn't live in Guelph during the Norm Jerry era, but just the couple of times I was able to meet him and talk to him, it just makes me really sad that he's gone now.
Mm-hmm. The legacy lives on, though, for sure.
Yes, the legacy does live on, and I do want to put in a plug, even though it is for our distinguished competition on Speedvale. CJOY is airing a Norm Jerry tribute special on Saturday at noon, and it's being hosted by Larry Malott, who was the former play-by-play man for the Guelph Storm. Actually, I think he still does that, actually. Well, at least when the Guelph Storm is playing. But Larry Malott is like one of the surely hundreds of people who benefited from Norm Jerry's experience and time as a broadcaster in the last 50, 60 years. So, if you want to flip over to CJOY on Saturday at noon for that, check that out. In the meantime, we are checking out ourselves. That is it for this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it. Stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire or on the Twitter at @OS_Guelph. If you'd like to listen to the show again, download it from our website every Monday or at the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. I am on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. You can find me also at GuelphPolitico.ca. Scotty, where can people find you on the internets?
I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. You can find out more about CFRU at our website, CFRU.ca. Which also has an archive. We are literally everywhere. You say open sources everywhere. That's good. Man.
Well,
a lift there, but it's true though.
We were talking about the golden days of City TV before we started recording the show today, and that was the City TV tagline: City TV everywhere. And of course, the famous Another one who's left us too soon, Mark Daly, the voice of Toronto.
We can say open sources, most places.
All right, well, with that thought, stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. after we get back from everywhere. We're open sources, and we will see you then.